Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Right now, we turn our attention to startups, and rightly so, because you see how COVID-19 has uprooted a lot of aspects of our daily lives and the economy that's been built around it. But out of crisis comes opportunity, and for some young entrepreneurs, the pandemic has unearthed green shoots for a new future. Singapore, you've got fast-growing startups in the food, retail, and technology industries that have been working to respond to this changing environment. And our government, of course, has set aside up to $150 million for a program that provides mentorship and grants to help startups get their innovative business ideas off the ground. In fact, Deputy Prime Minister Heng Swee Keat, in his ministerial statement in August, said that he will enhance the Startup SG Founder Program in phases, okay, as part of efforts to continue to spur innovation and entrepreneurship in Singapore. But then, once a startup makes it big locally, what's next? You would think to go international, right? Is it hard? Why is it hard? Well, our next guest is from a Southeast Asia-based startup that has successfully managed to scale internationally even during this pandemic. How did they do it? Let's find out. Greg Meehan is on the line. He's the Chief Revenue Officer at Superhands. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Elliot. How's things? I'm good.
Very good, sir. Thank you so much for taking the time. So, Superhands, Southeast Asia-based startup. You guys have successfully managed to scale internationally, especially during this pandemic. I'm curious, though. I mean, what did you do different that helped you to capitalize on this current period?
I can't speak for everybody else in terms of what we did differently. I can just talk about what we did and kind of what worked with regards to the expansion. So when we first sort of founded Superhands back in 2014, the business was founded with sort of a global mindset. So when we looked at our sort of product offering, it wasn't specific for a localized market. It's actually built for that global market. So we tried to understand from the very get-go what the cultural nuances were between here in Southeast Asia, then other areas that we were looking to focus on, i.e. the US, UK or Europe. So I think starting with that global mindset was really important. So we knew to kind of find out how people like to buy from us. Was it sort of was it product driven? Was it service driven? Was it a combination of the two? And then really getting your pricing strategy right around either whether you're selling in the US or UK or whether you're over here in Southeast Asia. So I think how you start is quite important, and then really understanding why you're actually looking to expand as well.
Okay.
So when you look at
I'm sorry, Greg. Those consumer habits, I want to bite on that a little bit. Is there a commonality internationally?
It'll all depend on what your service or your product is.
Okay.
So there might be some commonalities when you look at maybe a software as a service-based business. So that could be you pay per seat. It might be a $10 per seat kind of thing like you would with a typical sales CRM, for example. Or if you're looking at a managed service like you would with Superhands, where it's maybe a little bit different in terms of pricing, then there could be some differences there. So it's really having a conversation with your potential clients and your potential customers to really understand what kind of works for them as well and seeing how you might need to change.
That kind of conversation, I mean, it's like an international survey in that sense. How long did that process take?
It's an ongoing process.
Right.
So, I mean, when we first started out, we were really reaching out to online networks and who we thought would be a good fit for the business and really having those conversations up front. So it wasn't really approaching our potential clients with a, hey, buy our things. It was more of a, hey, we're working on this and we want to know if it works for you in this particular market and really engaging with people in that way and finding out that information. Because when you approach a conversation like that with potential clients, it changes the dynamic of the conversation. It's less, hey, why don't you buy this? It's more, we're trying to make something work for you and we're really trying to solve this problem which we think exists. Is this the same case where you are as well?
I like that philosophy. It really makes things more consumer-centric, which essentially is what a business should be about, right? But I suppose going international, there would be some hurdles. Could you share some?
Sure. I think it depends how you're looking to expand internationally as well. So when we first started Superhands, as I mentioned, we were built with that global mindset. Mm. Because we have a distributed workforce, so Superhands, we do data labeling for machine learning. And that basically means we add context to data to allow AI algorithms to understand that data to make decisions. So we make it smarter, basically. So when we look at that and we look at our ideal customer, it is a machine learning engineer or data scientist, and we found that there's common problems across the world, and there's some similarities there as well. So I think when we look at that, then we started with that global mindset to really to expand outwards. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at some challenges, we went direct to our client. And for some people, that might not work. You might need to look at alliances and channel partners and things like that if you're looking to expand internationally. So that could be a challenge as well when you look at distribution channels. So it depends on, as I mentioned before, how the customer or client wants to buy your things. And then when the other challenge when you look at expanding internationally is, what are the budgets that you want to set aside? And how do you know the timelines for those budgets based on the metrics you understand in your current market as well? So I think really delving deep into the numbers and having a look at your buying cycle, it could be 2 months, it could be 5 months, it could be 1 year, and adding a certain threshold to that when you look to expand internationally and creating that buffer. And I think it's important to understand that I'm the chief revenue officer, but it's not a siloed kind of thing that you look into. It's a whole company thing. You get everybody around you to really understand, okay, this is why we want to expand internationally and this is why it makes sense for us.
Well, after you describe it, definitely makes sense. And I think, you know, it sounds like this is something that everyone could do with, especially at this point in time. But did you face, you know, the issue of finding that sweet spot? Do you expand too early or too late? You know, sometimes companies go through that. What was Superhand's experience in that respect?
No, I think that's a really good question. Market timing is always going to be difficult. And then I always revert back to what are your existing clients saying and your potential clients saying and have those conversations. So to try and find that sweet spot is really involved in that research that you do on an ongoing basis and listening to the inquiries either that you get in or the response that you get from the people that you reach out to. And then you can make decisions based on that data and the feedback that you get. So, for example, when we look to further expand into the U.S., that's because we saw a definite demand and there was a definite problem to solve. Mm. And we could fulfill that need. And then we started to reach out and have these conversations. And we have a pretty solid sales team that are getting all this information and then feeding that back to our product marketing team, our tech team, our product. So all this information comes back and then we make a company decision about where we can actually position ourselves best. So finding that sweet spot is really about doing that research and speaking to the people that are actually going to look to engage with you.
Yeah, research is so important. And it also ties back to what you talked about earlier on when you talk to potential consumers in other countries where you would ask them what you could do for them as opposed to what you have for them.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, that philosophy, is there a difference between that and localizing your company in that region?
I think when we look at localization, it depends on how your company was built as well. So if you start off with a kind of a local sort of mindset, and this is, you know, we're going to build for Malaysia, or we're going to build for Indonesia, or we're going to build for Singapore, then you might miss out on that research that you can do early on for future expansion. That makes sense.
Right.
So for example, when we were building Superhands, we were already researching from the very, very get-go, how can we expand internationally? So it might shift how you actually do look into your clients and potential clients from the very, very early stages. So if you're thinking to expand and try and find that sweet spot for market timing, you should start doing your research early and then to try and find out what the market's actually telling you as well.
Right. It's almost as if, you know, when you're starting up the company, you have to have that proximity or to cater to expanding, you know, have a little bit of overlap in order to expand when the time is right in that sense. It should be looked at holistically.
In that sense, yes. I'm not saying you can't expand internationally if you haven't had that mindset, of course, but there needs to be an understanding both with your investors and board of directors and the company internally about how the strategy might change when the market demands you.
Mm. Do you think then that perhaps could be potentially a stumbling block for local companies who struggle to expand in the sense they don't go into building their company with the mindset that one day they're going to internationalize?
It might create additional hurdles from the people who operate internally. So, for example, there might be a very localized, focused marketing strategy. And to readjust that from a content point of view might take time. So it could be a struggle to change from that kind of strategy and your sales strategy as well. So if you look to expand internationally, so for us, we've always done Zoom calls, for example. And sometimes, you know, you're working in the US, there's a 12, 15-hour time difference. So, we've got calls at 5 a.m. and 3 a.m. And it's that kind of mindset behind when you hire people, what are they coming into? Is that expectation there? So it's I'm not saying it's a huge roadblock or a huge hurdle, but it's something you really need to consider.
For sure, for sure. And it could get worse if you don't, you know, put enough thought into it. Right now, I'm speaking with Greg Meehan, who is the Chief Revenue Officer at Superhands. We are talking about expanding internationally, why some Southeast Asia businesses kind of struggle in that respect. I want to talk about budgeting for an expansion, since you're Chief Revenue Officer, right? Is there some kind of a, like a rule of thumb when you come up with an expansion budget? I mean, how hard is that?
That's really hard. Honestly, I'd like to give you a silver bullet or a golden nugget, but it's going to depend on, are you a series A, series B, series C? And really, okay, what's your beachhead? How are you going to approach this new market? Are you going to have a really huge marketing strategy and you're going to dump a load of money on ads and different ways to reach out digitally, or is there a different strategy there as well? Is it more sales focused and, you know, there's cold outreach and things like that? Or is there another way that you actually need to adjust your pricing, for example, for a channel partner who's going to distribute it and take a margin off the top of your product or service? Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I can't give you this is the thing that you need. This is your magic number. I think it's more of a framework and a consideration about how you're going to enter that market and then work in a budget around that.
Yeah, it's always hard when you know, it comes to coming out with a budget. But I suppose these areas, maybe you could help us out with some tips. Let's say a company locally is planning for expansion internationally or thinking about it. I think to start off, what would your advice be when it comes to building that team to expand internationally?
So building a team to expand internationally starts at the early stages. So I would be looking for somebody like myself who maybe had that holistic view when it's looking at sales and marketing, client success and operations. So I'm starting with that person because, I mean, my role in particular is to align all these teams. Mm-hmm. About the reasons why we're doing certain things and pulling everybody together. So I don't necessarily take care of each of those individual functions, but it's more of the people. And then speaking with those people, because they're the experts. I have a sales team lead, a marketing team lead. You know, all these leads, that they're the experts in their particular domain, and they can give the information cross-department. And I think pulling the people together like that is very important. So it's making sure that you can hire people that can work together. Mm. And then starting those conversations early,
In terms of, and another thing, I guess, you know, most companies, they like to start early in terms of planning is potential roadblocks. Any advice on the kind of potential roadblocks a company should look out for when it comes to expanding internationally, or is it, you know, vastly different?
I think, obviously, the biggest one, you're going to look at cash. And I think you need to bookend that cash budget that you've got. So we're going to allocate this much cash to this expansion based on all the metrics that you have, and add in a buffer or a threshold. And then you need to be very clear with making a decision based on the results that you get. So if you're already experiencing results in your localized market, say just to give a number, 10, then if you're looking to expand, you set yourself a time frame of 3-6 months and say, okay, we need to hit at least 7, whatever that metric, either clients or leads or whatever that might be, and saying, this is the time that we're going to make a decision whether we continue down this road or not. So it's being very clear with that timeline and that metric, and then being able to pull the trigger at that moment in time. So it's being very clear with the cash that you're going to allocate towards this.
Would you say that that's one of the reasons why you guys were able to expand, you know, even during this pandemic? What was the secret behind it?
I don't think there's any sort of secret. We were sort of built for this kind of global market. So we've always done business over Zoom calls. It's great to meet face-to-face. Unfortunately, we can't do that anymore. Mm. But because our business was built digitally online doing these calls, it was kind of business as usual for us. So we had that engagement process, we had that sales process and that marketing process. So there's no secret to it. It's just how we operated. We would have loved to be on the ground, like speaking to different people in our different markets. Unfortunately, that couldn't happen. So we just continued on the right path, which is putting the customer first, putting the client first, having those conversations and speaking to people online.
You saved time on an infrastructure adjustment. You were able to just carry on. That probably was the secret of, or the convenience secret in that sense. We've been speaking with Greg Meehan, who is Chief Revenue Officer at Superhands. Greg, thank you so much for your time this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Cheers, Elliot. Take care.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.